This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
This is Deanna, and our guest today, our second guest today is Dr. Michael Lewis. He is the author of When Brains Collide. His website is When Brains Collide, and we had the pleasure of interviewing him previously, and what he has to offer is incredible, and it's something that we need to really consider. Not just for people who play football, but for numerous other people, and especially children. Dr. Lewis, welcome back to the program. Thank you.
It's great to be back with you.
And the information that you have in your book, you explain, well, first of all, you talk about how what happens when you have a concussion.
You need to take your fish oil, don't you?
when you have a concussion, and then you keep playing, or you don't pay attention to your body, and you suffer from traumatic brain injuries, and it could be anywhere. It could be on the playground, on the sports field, on the battlefield. And you ignore it, and it just gets really bad. It can get very bad. It can be life-threatening. It can actually cause you to have a permanent damage, especially if you have another concussion right on top of it, right?
Well, it can. And, you know, I've seen a number of patients that, because I'm a practicing physician, and I've seen a number of patients, they've had just really one exposure, one head injury, and they have ongoing symptoms even years later. And I have other patients who have had multiple concussions, and they seem to bounce back within 24 hours. So unfortunately, you never know. And I think there's a genetic component to it, but I say concussions are like snowflakes. Every single one is different.
Yes, indeed. And you don't even really have to hit your head to suffer concussions. For instance, if you fall.
Well, you can have whiplash. And I've actually had a patient whose only exposure was a roller coaster ride. And she knew the moment she got off the roller coaster that something had gone wrong.
Oh, my. Yes, or you could fall and slip on the ice. Not hit your head. Just fall and slip on the ice. Or slip on the ice and fall. And, yeah, that could be really, really dramatic and long lasting. But you don't just talk about the problem, you talk about the solution, which is.
Absolutely. And, you know, underlying whether it's a head injury or, you know, concussion, which are really the same thing, underlying it all is inflammation. And so when you hit your head, the reaction of your body is inflammation to bring the repair cells in to start healing, doing the healing process. But the problem is we're so out of balance with our diet and our nutrition that we don't turn off that inflammation. It becomes potentially becomes a chronic thing. And so the only good real way to address inflammation is what we eat. And that's what I address in my book, When Brains Collide.
Right. Yes. And the complete title is When Brains Collide, What Every Athlete and Parent Should Know About the Prevention and Treatment of Concussions and Head Injuries. And
The reason why I say that is, you know, I absolutely believe that moms and wives can and will change the world. And, you know, it's typically the mom that buys, you know, the food and cooks the food. And, you know, there's, of course, exceptions. But you know, it's moms can change the world.
Absolutely. That's what they're meant to do, right?
Right.
That's what they do. That's what they do best, I think. So this inflammation, which is very, very important, and which a lot of people have because of their diet or because of their of an injury or something of that nature, correct?
It is, and you know, I think we underestimate or we don't even appreciate how much of a problem inflammation is. Inflammation is really the underlying cause of so many different things. It's everything from heart disease to diabetes to even obesity. And so we don't appreciate how much inflammation plays a role in that. And even two or three or four steps further, we don't understand how nutrition can influence that. There was a great New York Times op-ed very recently, a week or two ago, and talked about how just what we eat and is in a bad way causing so much problems in our society, and how we could reverse or decrease all of that problems just by changing how we eat.
Okay, what are some of the things that contribute to inflammation that people should avoid?
Well, you know, fat for 50, 70 years, whatever, has been demonized. And so we talk about how fat, you know, causes problems like, you know, cholesterol, and so we have statins and stuff like that. And there's actually great studies that show that higher cholesterol, you actually live longer, so you don't
right.
have the problems. But that's not what you hear about in the noise and in the news, and that's not what you hear about when you go to your doctor and they want to put you on a statin and so on. So the brain's made of fat, and there's three most important types of fats. I mean, there's lots of different types of fats, but the three most important are cholesterol, probably number one. But there's omega-6 type of fats, and there's omega-3 type of fats. And omega-3 type of fats are about 30% of the weight of the brain. Omega-6s, which is in everything, omega-6s, they help promote inflammation, and omega-3s help resolve the inflammation. So you could imagine nature intended for us to be in balance. You need inflammation to repair things, and then you need to resolve it. But the problem is we're your typical American walking around is 20, 25, 30 to 1 omega-6s to omega-3s. So we're so out of balance, it's like throwing fuel in the fire of inflammation.
Wow. That is amazing. And we're supposed to eat kind of a Mediterranean diet and things like that. But as you say, we should be eating or using things like coconut oil and those kinds of things that will really help us. But then you can't sell the pharmaceutical drugs such as the statin drugs, which really are bad for you and do more harm than good, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. And, you know, that's one of the things is we're quick to turn to, we want that magic pill that's going to solve all our woes, rather than doing the hard thing, which is eating right and exercising on a regular basis.
Right. And I think even people that exercise, if they eat, off ate lunch meat with nitrates and nitrites and don't eat properly, you can't exercise your way to good health if you're eating really if you have a bad diet, correct?
Well, you know, that's the thing. Is, you know, if you look at obesity and weight loss, for example, there's an old saying that 80% of weight loss is done in the kitchen, not in the gym. And so we can't exercise our way out of this problem. We really can't. If you don't change your nutrition, how you eat, you could exercise all day long and not really make a difference.
Wow. And I think it's noticeable to me that during the last 20 years, I would say that there is more obesity among the population than ever before. And now we see obesity. It used to be that when you saw a child that was grossly overweight, that was an anomaly. But now there's so many children that are overweight. What would you attribute that to, in addition to poor diet?
I absolutely attribute it to a poor diet and poor choices, and that's why moms can make the difference. Because, you know, a 8-year-old or a 12-year-old is not going out and buying their own food and cooking their own food. That's what moms do. And so, you know, my wife would complain sometimes that, you know, our son is eating too many pretzels. I'm like, well, then don't buy pretzels. You know, there's a simple solution, because, you know, when he's 8 years old, he's not going out and buying pretzels. You're buying the pretzels and bringing them home. And so, you know, moms can change the world, and they just got to realize that that can be a good thing or a bad thing. And influencing it in a good way is what really should happen.
Right. And I think fast food, now moms do the shopping, but there are a lot of moms who are working. They're out in the workforce. They get home, and gosh, they're too tired to cook. And so it's just easier to go to McDonald's, which is a horrid place to eat. I haven't purchased anything at McDonald's for, I don't know, 30 years, maybe even longer, because fast food is just garbage. You put it in a bag somewhere. If you put a McDonald's hamburger in a bag and forgot it and left it on the shelf for 9 months, it would still be in the same condition as when you purchased it, with all the preservatives, and who knows where it comes from. It's just not really good food.
And you have to ask yourself, well, how are we getting to that point? How is the food being processed, or what is it being processed with?
Right.
And it's being processed with soybean oil principally, which is very high in omega-6 type of fats. And so when you're eating processed foods and fast foods and junk food, it's really, really high in omega-6s.
So that really does make a really big difference. And anything, I wouldn't use any kind of a soy product either. Because
most people think, well, I don't eat soy, or I don't eat soy. I mean, that's a Japanese thing, whatever. Everybody has soy in their diet. You just don't know it because it's high in omega-6s, and omega-6s are a very stable molecule. It's what allows us to process foods and ship it around the world and sit on the shelf at the store for months and months. Whereas omega-3s, you think about a fish, which is very high in omega-3s, and you put a fish out in the sun for an hour and it's spoiled. And so omega-3s aren't easy to process food with. And so we turn to the easier route, and that's with omega-6s, because it's very stable, and shelf stable will last for months.
Right. And as you say, the soy product, a lot of it, people do think of soy as something foreign, but it's in everything. People need to learn how to read the labels. And we should also, if you go to the grocery store, you should shop the outside circumference of the store and not venture into all the prepackaged stuff, where there are labels. Correct?
Absolutely. So, you know, the idea of eating fresh food, and Michael Pollan has certainly made a living out of writing books about this, is, you know, foods that your grandmother would recognize. So it used to be a time when you had to go to your local store almost daily to get fresh food to feed
right.
your family. And now,
right.
you know, you go to the grocery store once a week or once every 2 weeks and you buy stuff that will last forever.
Yes. And there's a reason it will last. But I do remember when I was growing up, my mother cooked all, she didn't work outside of the home until later, till I was older. And everything was, she wasn't a great cook, but she did cook. And she used fresh ingredients. And going to a restaurant was usually, and there's so many fast food restaurants now, but going to a restaurant then was, we went to the Chinese restaurant quite a lot, and well, we didn't really go out to dinner a lot. I guess that's another thing. It was not a natural thing. Maybe once a month we'd go out to dinner. And now, a lot of families grow up where they're buying food, fast food or restaurant food almost every other day, which you really don't know what is in that food because you didn't cook it. I think you're just taking your health, giving your health decisions over to somebody else. But you have no idea what is in the food or whether it's good for you or anything else, which I think you can attribute to the obesity epidemic that we have, plus the other things that you've mentioned, including those things in your book. Correct? Are you there? Did we lose our visitor, our guest? What happened? Mr. Producer, are we there? Can you hear me? What happened here? Mr. Producer, where are we here? I don't know what happened. What happened? I wonder what happened. Oh, okay. Yeah, that was interesting. Okay. Anyway, let's take a phone call. gosh. I wonder if it was something that I said. I don't think so. I didn't say anything wrong. Okay. I guess we've lost our guest. And so our producer is attempting to get him back, and hopefully we will get him back momentarily. But his book is When Brains Collide, and he explains how therapeutic doses of omega-3 rich fish oil and hemp-derived CBD oil can effectively assist in the prevention, management and healing of concussions and traumatic brain injuries, whether they're on the playground, on the highway, on the sports field, on the battlefield. There is a nutrition-based protocol for brain health that has helped patients, thousands of patients who suffered head trauma. All righty, I don't know what happened.
It just dropped. I don't know what happened.
I don't know. Did we say something that?
No, I don't think so.
I heard this click and then you disappeared. But I was saying that people didn't used to go out as often as they go out because mothers were home cooking food every day. So going out to a restaurant was a treat, not a regular thing, everyday thing. Okay, we are at a break. We will be right back in 3 minutes, so stay with us.
It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me.
All righty, we are back with Dr. Michael D. Lewis, and he is an expert on nutritional and holistic interventions for brain health, particularly the use of omega-3 fatty acids for the prevention, management, and rehabilitation of concussions and traumatic brain injury. And he's founder of Brain Health Education and Research Institute, which he founded in 2011. Alrighty, and the author of When Brains Collide, which is a very good book. And you also talk about CBD oil and what it can do. So why don't you tell us about the way that we should use, the way that we should address problems of the type that you're talking about with the use of omega-3 and CBD oil.
Well, you know, we talked about that imbalance of omega-3s and omega-6s. And so the quickest way, you know, it's great. We should and could decrease our omega-6 intake, but that's really, really difficult. And it's fat, so it stays in our bodies for months and years. So the quicker thing is to deal with the other side of the equation. How do we up our omega-3 side of things? And the easiest way is through supplementation. And, you know, with fish oil in particular. So let me just say that supplementation is the key word. It's not replacement of our diet. It's not a magic pill that's going to cure all our woes. We're talking about supplementing our diet with omega-3s through supplementation, and that can make a huge difference. And I see that every day with my patients.
Wow. Okay. How many patients do you see? Just people with this issue?
That's the only type of patient I see. So I have a small private practice just outside of Washington D.C. And in addition to all the other things I do, and when I retired from the military, I got some office space and started seeing patients, not just military and veteran patients, but people that have suffered from car injury, head injuries from car accidents, but sports injuries, teenagers who are struggling after being concussed. And so that's really the only type of patient I focus on.
Wow. Well, you were in the military for 31 years in the U.S. Army, and I'm sure that the situation that you were in, where you were working with the military, that you saw a lot of people who had suffered brain damage and brain injury. And so I think it's great that you have this second career and that you can continue to be of value to the people that have these issues. I think that's wonderful.
Well, thanks. It was an honor to serve our country and to serve the great soldiers that make up our army.
Right. And because you could have just gone off into the sunset, but you decided to not do that, which, as I said, I think that's a wonderful thing that you're doing. And now you still see people from the military?
I do. I see a few active duty military and a few veterans along the way.
Right. And do you ever treat them with psych drugs, or do you prefer to treat them holistically and with things other than pharmaceutical drugs?
Well, I could not tell you the last time I prescribed a psychiatric drug. Literally, it's probably been decades. And so I very much try to focus on the underlying problem, which, as we talked about previously, is really inflammation. And how do we address inflammation? There are no good drugs that adequately address inflammation. It really comes from our nutrition and nutritional supplements.
Wow, that is terrific. And I really don't, I don't like Big Pharma or the psychiatric drugs. But I guess sometimes it's inevitable that people are prescribed those drugs. If you've done everything that you could to address it nutritionally, what are your
pharmaceuticals are not, they're not the evil thing that people want to try to make them out to be. I mean, they have a role, and they have, you know, potentially powerful actions on symptoms and on the body, and that's really important. We shouldn't discount that.
Oh, okay. All righty. We're at a three-minute break. We will be right back. This is Deanna, and our guest is Dr. Michael D. Lewis, and he is a medical doctor, and he is in his second career, but doing the same thing that he did in his first career when he was in the U.S. Army for 31 years. Anyway, we were talking about Big Pharma and their pharmaceutical drugs. And that, and I was saying that I really would try to avoid them if possible, but as you indicated, sometimes, those drugs do address symptoms that cannot be immediately addressed through the use of, omega-3 oils or a Mediterranean diet or CBD oil. Correct?
Well, there are times, you know, when those pharmaceutical drugs can have a profound improvement in somebody's life. But they don't necessarily address the underlying situation, which is typically poor nutrition. And, you know, so we talked a little bit about omega-3s and fish oil as a supplementation. But I'm going to steer the conversation a little bit towards CBD because, you know, something that, you know, wasn't even known when I went to medical school was that we have, and it's now known to be the most abundant amount of receptors in our body are these cannabinoid receptors. And, you know, we have these cannabinoid receptors in our brain and throughout our immune system, and they're there for a good purpose. It's for to keep us stable, to keep us happy, healthy, good digestion, pain-free. And, you know, they weren't designed, nature didn't put us in this situation because they wanted us to, you know, to partake in things, you know, even though they're called cannabinoid receptors. They're not there because of to interact with the cannabis plant. That's just the nomenclature that's been used. They're there for very good reasons, but it's interesting that nature gives us this plant that interacts with these receptors, but our body makes these cannabinoids ourselves. And so, you know, if you think about a runner's high, for example, we used to call it endorphins, and really the reality of it is, these are endogenous cannabinoids that keep us happy and healthy. And it's fascinating to me especially coming from an Army background, that we have this plant that's been used for thousands and thousands of years in every major culture and society called cannabis. And while it's been demonized in the last 100 years or so here in the United States, and it's been used again for thousands of years by every major culture. And what it does is it interacts with these receptors that weren't put there for this plant, but put there because they're so important to give us balance. And I mean, like, emotional balance and psychological balance. And particularly, you know, the area where I deal with is hemp-derived cannabis, not marijuana. I don't deal with marijuana at all. THC, for example, has a lot of issues. It has some medicinal properties, but a lot of issues. It's really the CBD and the other things in the cannabis plant, particularly in the hemp plant, that have tremendous value. And I think, you know, that's the explosion we're seeing in the last 2-3 years in the nutritional supplement industry. Everybody's talking about cannabinoids and hemp and, you know, medical marijuana. And it's because it really is that good of an interaction with our bodies to make us feel, you know, help with chronic pain, help with anxiety, and help decrease the inflammation that goes on in our bodies.
Wow. Now, what is the difference between hemp-derived CBD oil and the marijuana, which has the THC?
It's a great question. And, you know, so one of the things, you know, as of December 2018, the 2018 Farm Bill basically defined hemp as having THC content of 0.3% or less at all aspects during the growth, the plant and the processing and the products that come from hemp. And so 0.3% or less, so basically a trace amount of THC, is what defines hemp. And because of that, it makes hemp legal at the federal level across the board. And so that's the big difference between hemp and marijuana, is hemp basically has zero to trace amounts of THC. So you could consume hemp all day long and never get that psychoactive high that marijuana gives you.
And you're not going to wake up the next morning with a marijuana hangover.
Well, it's because it's not marijuana and it doesn't have the THC.
Right. Wow. Which is a big difference. And I know that many areas are legalizing marijuana for recreational purposes, which I don't think is a good idea to use medically. I think CBD oil is great. It doesn't have the THC. I think that, as you have explained it, would be more beneficial than what they are producing that they are now regulating. And I think the reason they're doing the medical marijuana might be for, I don't know, for financial reasons, but I don't think it's a good idea to use anything recreational that would alter your, how you're feeling, as far as, well, I don't drink. I don't drink anything. So I just think recreational drugs are inappropriate.
Well, yes and no. I don't agree with recreational marijuana. There's really, when you talk about cannabinoids, CBD, THC, and so on, there's really three categories. And one is pharmaceutical. There's an approved pharmaceutical drug that's based on marijuana derived CBD, and there are synthetic THC products out there that help stimulate appetite. So there's the whole, so there's that pharmaceutical aspect of it. That's one realm. A second realm is medical marijuana. You know, so not pharmaceutical, but medical marijuana. You know, if you're in a state and you, that has medical marijuana, you go see a doctor, you get a recommendation, you could take that to the dispensary and get medical marijuana. And that's a whole different category. Then there's the whole hemp-derived CBD oil realm. That is basically, you can find hemp-derived CBD online in all 50 states in over 3,000 or 4,000 stores, like mom and pop, health food stores, good health food stores, good nutrition stores, holistic pharmacies, but now even CVS and Walgreens and Kroger supermarkets are now carrying CBD products derived from hemp. So those are three very different areas, and probably the least well-known and the most wild area is that whole medical marijuana, because it's, how do you regulate that? It's something that, you know, we're struggling with at the political level, very much so.
Right. How do you regulate it? How do you decide what kind of a dose to put a person on? And I do have in my medicine cabinet hemp-derived CBD oil that I've had for some time. It's just, and I got it, I ordered it online, but now, as you say, you can buy it just at several places that you don't have to order it online. You can just buy it in a store, a mom and pop store, or anywhere else that you can find it. And I don't think that, I think that you would use it, I don't think there's the harm that can be imposed upon a person who is taking the medical marijuana as far as dosage. How much do you give them? It's just too tricky, I think.
Well, while it's kind of the wild, wild west, you know, both medical marijuana and the nutritional hemp products, it very much needs more regulation and control. But at the same time, it's really it's fascinating that this is being driven by the consumers. And, you know, the consumers are really, they've latched on. There, you know, there was a whole underground marijuana community for decades. And now that it's kind of come out in the light, they're really driving this whole economy of hemp and marijuana. And it's fascinating because now the governments, you know, federal and state governments are having to catch up to the consumers. Whereas, you know, the pharmaceutical industry, things don't get out to the consumers until they've gone through the system. This is kind of turning everything on its head. And so consumers are having these great, reactions, these great stories, these great experiences with cannabis. And it's really pushing the government to catch up to them. And I think that's actually a really good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, I know that hemp was used, well, I think it was used for paper, was used for many things. The colonists grew hemp. It was something that was always around, and then it was criminalized in the 1920s, I believe.
It was demonized in the 1930s, but it really wasn't until 1970 that this whole concept of a Schedule 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 drug, and marijuana was thrown in as a Schedule 1 drug, which was actually just completely absurd and stupid and crazy. And, you know, and that's what is having to be undone, that whole process of, you know, how bad is cannabis for you. And, you know, a Schedule I drug is that has no medicinal value, is highly addictive, and has huge amounts of side effects. Well, cannabis doesn't have any of that. But yet, it's still legally a Schedule I drug, and that's what needs to be done, undone, by our legal system.
Oh, okay. Right. It's amazing. One has to question why the big switch from the 1930s. Is it different people involved, or what is it? It just... If something is good for you, it should be good for you from the time that people first started using it and not regulated. But the government likes to regulate things, correct?
Well, they do. And interestingly enough, there's a system called the U.S. Pharmacopeia, which basically it lists all the pharmaceutical drugs that are available in the United States. And for almost 100 years, from roughly around, I'm going to say 1850 to 1945, I think it was, that cannabis products, cannabis extracts, principally from marijuana, but cannabis extracts were listed as pharmaceutical drugs in the U.S. Pharmacopeia up until 1945. And so... It's very odd that this would have been demonized and where we are with it.
Right. Yeah, well, so, for instance, what if somebody comes in or brings somebody in and they want you to treat a patient with dementia? What would you do?
Well, generally, you know, where my focus is as a physician is I focus on diet and exercise, lifestyle medicine. And so, you know, as far as dementia, it's not an area that I really deal with, but if, you know, it were an issue, one of my brothers or, you know, relatives or somebody asked me, I would ultimately go back to diet, nutritional supplements, and exercise as the principle, the foundation of how to deal with all this.
Right. Right. And definitely nutrition and other lifestyle choices, I think contribute to a person's health. Well, I guess most of those things are the diet, and your activities, that sometimes we do create our own physical problems.
I absolutely agree. I think, you know, let's go back to where we started. I think these are habits that are taught to our children. And so that's where I get back to moms can change the world and moms influence the world. And so if our kids are growing up with the idea of eating fast foods, I think that's going to be harmful in the long run. And we're seeing that with the amount of obesity that we're experiencing in this country.
Right. And autism also. We'll be right back after a 3-minute break. Our guest is Dr. Michael Lewis. He is the author of When Brains Collide. And when we were going to the break, I mentioned children with autism. Do you think that has anything to do with lifestyle or obesity or what?
Well, autism is very complicated. It's a rabbit hole I'm not sure I want to go down. Because, you know, there are groups that will want to point towards vaccinations. I personally think that there's a huge genetic component to it. And I think that there's an environmental component to it. And environmentally, I would put nutrition in that category as well. But, you know, how do you explain autism in a, you know, a 12-month-old? I think there's, you know, there may be something to the whole vaccination issue, which I don't know, and I don't really want to take a stand on because I don't know enough about it. I just think that there's a huge genetic component to it.
Okay. Oh, that's, I like that you're sticking right with what you know works, that you're looking at this holistically and that you're treating the people that visit you in a holistic manner and starting with the basis of lifestyle changes and, not medications, but you're relying on things that are natural that would help them heal, and not treating the symptoms. That is what I appreciate about your work.
Well, prior to World War II, when we didn't have antibiotics and we didn't really enter the golden age, if you want to call it that, of pharmaceutical development, post-World War II, prior to World War II, we really had to rely on nutrition as how we treated not just infectious diseases, but many things. As a great example, the basic treatment for tuberculosis, which was a huge problem at the beginning of the 20th century and prior to World War II, the treatment for tuberculosis was cod liver oil, fish oil basically, but cod liver oil because it's high in vitamin A and D, and moved to dry environments and some of my relatives, I had a relative from Brooklyn who was told you need to go west where it's dry because that's how you're going to help your tuberculosis.
Right.
And
yes.
So that drove some migration to Colorado and California.
Right. Right.
But principally we use nutrition. We use cod liver oil as the only thing that could really help tuberculosis because it was high in vitamins and omega-3s.
Right. Or mothers just gave it to their children on a regular basis just because it was good for them.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, thank you. Our time is up, and thank you so very much for being on the program today.
You're always very welcome. I can't wait to come join you next time.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye now. All righty, we're at the top of the hour. We will be right back in 3 minutes.